in trouble.
It's going to get there. He turned 32 yesterday. Does he have a vintage moment in it? In the end zone, it is caught for the win. Richard Rodgers with a walk-off touchdown. A game ender for the Packers.
Welcome to the Glass Half Empty podcast on The Big Lead. I'm Ryan Glasspiegel. We are joined by Diana Russini, who is an NFL specialist at ESPN. She does a bunch of stuff. She reports news. She anchored SportsCenter today. She has a regular role on Get Up. She has a reporting role on NFL Countdown. Diana, how glad are you now we're a few days into the real football season and we're all in the throes of it?
It's the happiest I am all year long. I didn't realize I was depressed all summer. I thought I was happy, but I think I was just sort of going through the motions, pretending so people in my life that I care about didn't think I was strange, that I was actually present. But really in the back of my mind, I was like, you know, I'm not happy unless football's happening and it's finally back.
It's weird because kind of forget how when you're watching it all day Saturday and all day Sunday and then the Monday game, I'm still tired on Wednesday. How do you, and you're even much more focused on it. How do you kind of measure the work and the sleep?
That is the hardest thing because it's not just doing your assignment and showing up and physically being on set or in the field and then watching games. But there's prep involved in what we do. You can't just wing it. You have to be able to have background. You have to get involved with the stats and do your homework and research. And, oh, yeah, by the way, make phone calls and, you know, text with sources and get in touch with people who can help guide you in certain scenarios. So, yeah, no, the balance act of just doing the job. Let's not even talk about balance of life. Just being an NFL reporter, host, insider. It's definitely a juggle, and it's been challenging. I've actually reached out to a lot of different people over the years to find out how they do it. And obviously being organized is a big part of it, but I just try as hard as I can to multitask, which isn't my strength, but yeah, that seems to be the way I do it. And yeah, I don't get much sleep, but that's okay.
You're also traveling to a new city every week. When in the week do you find out where you're going to be on Sunday?
Okay, it's the best moment on Sunday for reporters at ESPN. So it's usually around like the 5-6 o'clock hour. And we get a text message from our NFL executive who just sends us a text to let us know what game we have. And you don't have a say in it. You can't respond with, yeah, I don't really want that game or I don't like that team. You have to just do it. And so I start staring at my phone. And sometimes in the press box, if I'm sitting with people I know, I'll take little bets of, all right, what game do you think I have next week? And we'll put dollars on the table in front of me and whoever, you know, guesses the game I get gets the money. But yeah, no, it's actually really fun to think about where you're going to be. And I like to think about why I'm going to certain places too. Like, I wonder why they're sending me to Pittsburgh this week. What do they want? You know, so it's fun. It's all part of the season.
What's your most favorite NFL city to work from?
New Orleans. Hands down, just because there's a loyalty they have to the Saints. The actual environment there when you're watching the games is like nothing I've seen in the NFL. Yeah, everyone thinks New Orleans and thinks the party, but the people that live there, that's not their lives, obviously. They're not running down Bourbon Street. So I've had an opportunity to spend time with people in Louisiana over the last season, and they're the nicest, kindest people, and, you know, they love their Saints. But, you know, I will say it's been cool to go to different cities, places I've never been before, and just get to know what these communities are like. And they're all very distinctly different. They are. Of course, there's a loyalty to all their teams, but up to this point, and I've been to almost all the cities at this point, I will say New Orleans is my favorite.
You're making our producer, Mike Schamberger, happy because he's a Saints fan and he lives in Louisiana. The interesting thing about the Saints crowd, first of all, I think the Superdome is the loudest building I've watched sports in. I've gone to, I think, two games there. And then also, I'm not going to say I've been to every NFL stadium, but the Superdome has a really refreshingly diverse crowd in comparison to some of the other ones I've been to. Have you noticed that?
I feel like I need to preface this with, I covered New Orleans a lot last season. I wasn't covering them before last season. So when you cover a team that's doing what we saw them do last year, there's an energy that just, you know, everyone just talks about what it was like when they won the Super Bowl in 2009. So that feeling, oh my gosh, we can do it again. I think that's sort of what made it so electric. But the pregame and the details that they put into the production of the games, you know, people always at ESPN talk to me about, oh, I can't believe you don't do college. You're crazy. You missed out on such a big chunk of what would have been so fun for you as a sports reporter, because I've never covered college ever. There's so much pageantry and history. I think for what I think college is like, New Orleans is probably the closest to what it would feel like if I went to an LSU game.
Well, so you spend most of your time on the NFL, but you've hosted SportsCenter, I believe, a couple times recently, including today. What's it different for prepping when you're doing a big generalist program that encompasses all the stories versus being hyper-focused on one league of one sport?
Anchoring SportsCenter is the hardest job at ESPN. Nothing comes close to it. And what makes it so special is, I would hope as the viewers, you watch it and it doesn't seem hard. It's not supposed to seem hard, but it is, because the amount of knowledge that you have to have from every single sport and the depth to it, and being able to add your own opinions here and there, and, you know, your own little sayings. There's just a lot that goes into it. You cannot just show up. That is the one thing about SportsCenter. And I did it for 2.5 years before I switched to the NFL fully. So I've done a lot of shows. I've single anchored. I've done 4 hours straight. I've been all over the place. And it's really, if you can master it, or at least just be solid at it, you can pretty much do anything. But in order to be good at SportsCenter, you have to be well-versed, well-read, and you really have to be honest with yourself about what you're not good at and what sport you're not naturally drawn to. For me, it was golf. That killed me when I started at ESPN. I never played. The men in my family didn't play, or the women. So I had to learn it and get good at it. So, when I would research, instead of going right to football on days I knew I had SportsCenter, I would force myself to listen to golf podcasts, watch, talk to people about golf more. So really, the best thing about SportsCenter is it magnifies what you're not very good at, and it forces you to, it's challenging, and it makes you get better at everything. And it's a cool feeling when you can walk off that set and go, wow, I kind of know everything going on in sports right now.
On NFL Countdown, so you spend a couple days, maybe even a whole week around a team, and then you go on Countdown and it's very like boom, 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 boom. And you have to distill all of that week into kind of like tiny 90-second nuggets. What's your process for going about doing that?
All right. First of all, can you produce for me? Because I don't get 90 seconds. I would love 90 seconds. No. So the feeling on Countdown is NFL fans are educated. They're smart. They follow, whether they may not be watching NFL live every day, but they're on Twitter. You know, they're reading blogs. They're on .com. They have an idea what the storylines are. So our challenge is on Sunday mornings, bring the football viewers something they haven't heard, something they haven't seen, a conversation maybe you had that will give a little insight into the game plan. And it sounds easy, but it's really hard because there's so much to get to and there's so much that's been revealed already. So you have to really dig and use your contacts and play ball, even with the PR staffs of these different teams, to try to get access and, you know, get 15 minutes with the head coach on Friday or Saturday, or, you know, get the quarterback on the phone for 5 minutes, two questions possibly. You know, it's really, we're really pushing hard this season for this show to be not only entertaining and fun and light, but to have the viewers go, all right, I had no idea that was going down in Pittsburgh, but cool, I'll be watching for that today.
In several years, do you think that you will be talking about gambling as a bigger proportion of your personal content? Or do you think that they want to really delineate the reporters and put them in silos and have some people talk straight football and some people talk straight gambling?
I've been thinking about that a lot, Ryan, especially lately, because there's certainly been a push and it seems to be the hot topic right now because it's been legalized in so many different states. I think this is getting blown out of proportion just a bit. I think there's interest in it right now because it's new, it's shiny, it's fun. But in terms of what my role is going to be, I still think I'll always choose. I don't think my employer will make me have to go in that area. I think at the end, journalism is still always going to exist and doing it this way, reporting facts, sticking to the storylines versus, you know, dipping our toes in the gambling world. I mean, it's obviously people that are gambling can watch my reports and take what they can to make their decisions. But I don't think it's going to be something where we're going to transition into having to do that.
Who are some people behind the scenes at ESPN that have been really helpful for you in your 3+ years there?
Oh, wow. Behind the scenes people, there are tons, and I feel bad even pointing them out. I probably start in terms of, for me, especially when I was on the SportsCenter side, Mike McQuaid was the hardest, I call him coach, which sounds so funny, in my mind, because he treats me like an athlete when he talks to me. From day one, he picked up on what drives me and how to connect with me. So he figured out that at times I need to be built up and told I'm doing well here, but he'll be the first person to send me an email or a text message. Your first question in your post-game interview was terrible. You need to be better. We expect more from you. So I take to hard coaching very well, and he knows that. And he's probably grown me the most of anyone at ESPN because he's put me in positions, sometimes even in roles that I wasn't ready for on SportsCenter, because he knew sometimes I had to get a pie in my face to learn how to grow. And he knew that I would figure out that I hate failing and I hate not being able to be great out there. So being prepared, he sort of taught me how to prepare well, and how to communicate better to people back in Bristol about what I need to be better. Chad Minutillo is on Countdown. He's one of the main producers. He's been phenomenal in just really pushing me to dig deeper. They look to me to be the one reporter out there, along with everybody else, to get something that nobody else has. And while at times I joke, I'm like, gosh, you guys put all this pressure on me, I think they get that I need that. I'm a type of personality. I need to be told that they want me at a certain level. That way every week I have to come through and pay the rent, so to speak. I've really had a very new relationship with Jimmy Pitaro, our new president. But from the interactions I've had with him so far, I don't want to put this pressure on him, but I feel like he's going to be somebody that's going to help grow my career, because he is all in on people that want to work. He's all in on bringing ESPN back to the place where you can get the best information and still have a really good time. So for me, this has been like a really refreshing few months, especially under his leadership.
You mentioned getting things that nobody else has. One of those, the ways that manifests itself is in scoops. It was a couple years ago, I think, that MMQB wrote a profile about Adam Schefter, and they said that Seth Markman, who's ESPN's NFL czar, has kind of a scoop scoreboard where every offseason he writes and ranks the 50 biggest potential free agent signings, and it's weighted for who gets like the biggest signings. What's the biggest home run you've ever hit as far as breaking something from his Scoop scoreboard?
From the Scoop scoreboard, I would say either when I first started, if you recall with the Washington Redskins, Robert Griffin III was still in the picture, and Jay Gruden was the new head coach, and they played a couple preseason games, and it was obvious to everybody that Kirk was the better quarterback, and they had to make a decision who was going to be the starter week one. And I was able to get that info that it was going to be Kirk Cousins. So in terms of getting that information, that was really big, because that was the end of the RG3 era. But in terms of free agency, I would say Brandon Cooks, getting traded from the New Orleans Saints to the New England Patriots was probably one of my bigger breaks, during that free agent period, which is the most insane 3 weeks of my life. I lose 5 pounds every year. I'm not even kidding. I'm a disaster. And fortunately, like most of my friends and colleagues that know what it's like for the reporters will send me notes, send me food to my place. I've had, you know, my younger sister cooks me dinner that entire week because she knows I won't eat because I'm just on my phone making calls. It is insane, but it's so fun because we make it so competitive.
It's funny that this is competitive because, like, with things like scoops, like signings and trades and who is going to, like, start and who's going to sit. And as a media reporter, I'm definitely in this too, although it's obviously more of a niche beat. But, like, a lot of these things are going to be known anyway on a varying timeline. But at the same time, being the first to break the news is a signifier that you're connected with people at the highest levels of the beat.
Yeah, it is really weird. I've been asked a million times from people, like, why do you like doing this? Why do you do this to yourself? And I've tried in the past, which kind of sounds funny saying it out loud, to quit it because it's like a drug. Like, I'm like, oh, you know, I have so many different roles. Why do I have to be the insider? And it every single time I think to myself, you know, I'm just going to focus on being a host. I'll get a scoop on something. I'll step in it. And it really is just my personality to compete. So even if I didn't want to do it, I don't think I could. Because I enjoy that feeling of victory so much. And I'd be lying if I didn't say that I love getting a text message from Adam going, great job, or, you know, you kicked our butts on it, or whatever, or friends from other networks that will send me a note. It's fun. And you know, sometimes what we do can be boring. So the fact that this kind of gives it a little bit more edge, and I love when fans appreciate it. Some of the best like text messages or tweets I'll get, like especially fans of the team of the information I just gave, you see how excited they get about the news that you gave them. And I think it also helps with credibility. You're always going to fight that as a female in the NFL. We all know that story. But when you can show the football fans out there that you have contacts, that you talk to players, you talk to agents, you talk to owners, GMs, it changes your world and it changes the access you get, because when you have a Rolodex, you can get a lot more, and your value to your company also is a lot more because you're getting something no one else can get.
I want to switch now to this NFL season. It seems to me that there is a big excitement amongst all of these young quarterbacks, whether that's rookies like Baker Mayfield, who hasn't started yet, Sam Darnold, who did start and played really well after his pick six, or Patrick Mahomes and others that we've been lacking over the last couple years, and it's really refreshing. Are you sensing that as well?
Oh, this is the best thing to happen to the league. You know, I joke around with Cassidy Hubbard, with Rachel Nichols sometimes about the NBA. We are obsessed with it. And the reason why the NBA does so well is they have this ability to stay in the news all the time. They're young, they're fun, they're hip. They're savvy on social media, and they're so ahead of us in terms of the league. The NBA is so far ahead of the NFL with connecting with the younger fan. And these young quarterbacks are going to be able to give the NFL a chance to build that and maybe even emulate what the NBA has been able to do. So when you say that we haven't really had quarterbacks, we've had young quarterbacks. We just haven't had good ones. So the fact that
well, that's what I meant.
I was watching Sam Darnold the other night, and, you know, deep in the core of me, I was rooting for him. One, because he's a professional and he's been wonderful to work with. I've covered him multiple times this summer at training camp and OTAs. But it's nothing but success for the league if these young quarterbacks can be the next generation of Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady, Peyton Manning. If we can get those kind of quarterbacks back, Big Ben, you know, it's just going to make the league so much more fun, which I feel like it is.
And to your point about the NBA, in addition to like the exciting young quarterbacks, we've also had some benign drama happening over the last couple months, whether that's like Jalen Ramsey being quoted absurdly ripping people in GQ and ESPN the magazine, or Le'Veon Bell feuding with his offensive line. We're getting some of these stories that don't have a real negative human toll that are just fun to talk about and joke about.
I know. I wish that we could do more of that. And, you know, I have learned from the NBA a little bit, and I've tried it. I've tried dipping my toe a little bit, not to copy them completely, but a lot of my nature towards covering the league has been a little bit more hard-nosed in the past. And maybe some of that was just personal, feeling like I needed to show I knew the league or prove or whatever it was. But now that I'm in a really great spot with tons of support at ESPN, I've been trying to find these places where I can tell stories of fun and light. I covered Minnesota this weekend, and I was talking to Dalvin Cook, and up next to his locker was this schedule that somebody had made him. Apparently it turned out to be some reporter that he had met, but either way, it was his schedule, and every game listed, he had a word to describe it. And I took a picture of it and I posted it on social, and you know, it got a little bit of steam, but it was fun. It was kind of like the Jalen Ramsey idea with the one word association. I think anytime we can start discovering stuff like that, and we don't need to take it so seriously, I think that's just going to help the league. It's going to help ESPN, and it certainly makes it awesome for people that have to cover it. It doesn't always have to be so hard.
What do you think happens first? Le'Veon Bell returns to the Steelers, or Baker Mayfield starts for the Browns?
Baker Mayfield starts for the Browns is my belief. I think that the Browns' plan has been from day one not to play him. They want to redshirt him. But I think look, we had this scare with Tyrod already in the preseason, then in game one. I think it's going to be one of these situations where it's just going to happen because he has to go out there. The Le'Veon Bell situation, I know how much he loves the game of football. And I know that sounds cliche. You hear it all the time about players. But he's just one of those, he needs to be on the field. But the way it's working, you know, the way it's working out between his camp and the Steelers, I just don't see it happening.
I don't know. I think that I talked to Albert Breer yesterday, and he said, not based on reporting, but based on guess, he thinks that Le'Veon will be back by the end of the month because of all the money that's at stake. But it's crazy because I don't think that anybody really has a firm line on exactly what Le'Veon Bell is thinking in terms of when he's going to return. It's just that he feels very disrespected that he didn't get the type of contract offer from the Steelers that the Rams, for example, gave to Todd Gurley.
Yeah, you don't know how long this is going to last. And you're right. There hasn't been any solid reporting yet on, all right, here's Bell's plan. This is what they're thinking. We're guessing a little bit, you know, we're comparing to other situations, but it's certainly been very difficult figuring out, all right, what's the game plan here for them? What's their approach? How do they think this is going to get done? Do they want it to get done? Or is he just going to eat it and get fined all these games.
Do you have any leads on what is the extent of the severity of Aaron Rodgers' knee injury?
As of right now, no. As of right now, there's no information that I can provide. The only thing I have is what everyone else has, which is it's really become a daily thing. He's rehabbing it. I mean, listen, we're all going to kind of have the attitude I know Mike Zimmer has right now, which is, the guy can walk on water. He'll probably be able to get out there. I was on a plane on Sunday night. You want to talk about the disadvantages of this job is on Sundays, you don't get to watch games the way everybody else does. I actually, on Sunday night, I have a little tradition with a really good friend of mine in the business. Whenever I get back Sunday night, no matter what time it is, we always meet up and he watches all the games all day long and we just rip through every game. And most of the time it's him telling me what happened because I didn't watch the games. So I'll go home and watch SportsCenter and check out the highlights later, but I want to know, all right, what's everybody talking about? What's this? But either way, Sunday night I missed that Packers game and I got off and my phone was going crazy. I actually tweeted, it was funny. So what I missed, and my responses were hysterical. Yeah, you didn't miss anything. Well, apparently I did, then once I saw the highlights, it was devastating that I missed it. But we'll see. But, listen, if I had a bet, Aaron Rodgers is going to play.
This is kind of weird and counterintuitive, but I almost think that the Packers offense is better when he's immobile and has to get rid of the ball quickly. Like, he makes so many great plays improvising with his feet he evades pressure and then chucks it 60 yards down the field that you have in your mind that that's a net asset. But I actually think that he's better when he's just throwing crossing routes and getting rid of the ball out of shotgun in under 2 seconds. What's your thoughts on that?
Well, think about what it forces them to do. They need to be crisper on offense. Like, the game planning needs to be completely, I don't want to say completely different, but they can't get away with those athletic moves he makes because somebody didn't run the right route or there was a mistake or a coverage, showed up that he wasn't expecting. I think it just puts a lot more pressure on McCarthy and what they're doing in terms of trying to make this work. And I do think everything I'm hearing out of Green Bay, what Mike Pettine's doing on this defense, I think that's going to be a big story this year because the players I talk to who aren't quick to rave about what they're doing there in terms of defense have said there has been a complete culture change from the expectations that Pettine has from not only just what they're believing in and their mindset is there on defense, but even how their day-to-day, how they're conducting things, how involved all the different units are compared to when it was very separate in years past. So I think that's going to be a highlight that we're not talking about right now because we're focused on Aaron, but I bet you come week 6, week 7, we're going, the Packers defense is pretty good considering, they were just okay last year, if not kind of bad.
Well, as a Packers fan, I certainly hope you're right with that.
I didn't realize you were a Packers fan. All right, so Aaron Rodgers is playing. He's great. You guys are going to win a Super Bowl.
I hope you're right. So is there anything that we didn't talk about either pertaining to the NFL or your career at ESPN or really anything in the world that you want to talk about on this platform right now?
Listen, it's so early in the NFL. I feel like we could talk so many different – we could probably rip through every team right now, and I have 1,000 things to say about each of them because I do think there's a different feeling this year. There's something about this season, whether it's these young quarterbacks or maybe just the lightness that we've seen over the last few months with the league, something's happening that is making the NFL just cool and fun to watch again. So I hope that maybe we can do this again towards the end of the season and we can talk more football, but – in terms of my journey, listen, I'm so lucky and appreciative. And really the thing, people see it on Twitter. They see a lot of colleagues of mine supporting each other. I think the one thing that people don't know, especially about the on-air talent at ESPN, men or women, there is a protectiveness and a support system that somehow is so strong. And if you look at what ESPN has been through over the last few years, it's incredible to think that there's a network of people that really are there for each other. You know, from someone like Stephen A. Smith to Ryan Russillo to Schefter. You know, most people that follow me on Twitter know Cassie Hubbard's one of my best friends. Beadle, Michelle Beadle, Sam Ponder. There's so many people that just are all in together. And I think that's just great for the company. And I think a lot of people think we're so competitive with each other, and we are, but there's also a substantial amount of love there, which is really cool. And I think people can see it on the air.
Thanks so much, Diana. Really appreciate your time. No, obviously your time's at a premium this time of year. Once again, that's Diana Russini. She's an ESPN NFL insider, host, analyst, etc. And this is the Glass Half Empty podcast on the Big Lead.
Such turn strange.